joined today by Andy Brown, Global CEO and Chairman of Kantar Media Division.
Oh, well, hi, Andy. To start with, we've been asking people to give some sort of account of what's happening to TV viewing, not just in terms of numbers, but actually also composition in the market.
Sure. I mean, we're seeing obviously significant lifts in TV audiences around the world. And again, it won't surprise you in terms of what's happening in terms of genre. Significant declines in areas like sport, but also significant increases in areas like TV news. So, I mean, if you look at things like the BBC News 1 o'clock and 6 o'clock slots year on year, you're looking at anything from about a 60 to 100% increase. Now, you have seen a little bit of this concept that people are describing as news fatigue. You've seen a little bit of that coming back. So over the last couple of weeks, we're probably at about, 15 to 20% lower than that first bounce that we got when the initial lockdown came in. That's UK data.
Yeah. And have you got any idea what's happened in China, for example, where obviously you've got associates? It's not a Kantar country, but it is a country that Kantar supplies to. I mean, do you have any idea, as the first country to be affected, what happened?
Yes, I mean, we saw similar impacts in some respects to what we saw in the other markets. And you are beginning to see a little bit of audience decline as things go a little bit back to normal, availability to view is reduced and viewing levels are coming closer. Now, it's really very early. We've only seen one piece of data from that. I think the other point that, might be interesting is also this, where we're capturing streaming. Now, as you know, with Barb in the UK, we're in the process of developing services with Barb around that. We've partially installed the focal meter, or the router meter, which captures streaming into the home, at least at the URL level. Where we have seen that where that's fully installed and reporting in other markets, I think it's been quite interesting. Yes, we've seen lifts of maybe 30% or so in audience around things like Netflix and YouTube. But I think perhaps a slight surprise is the strength of the viewing on broadcast of VOD, which has also seen lifts of about 30%. So it's quite interesting stuff coming out where you can measure it, where we're able to measure it around some of the streaming consumption as well.
Yeah, interesting. But of course, the SVOD services don't offer any news service, so one would expect actually quite a positive performance from the regular broadcasters in this period. And I wonder, when we are at the other side, what attitudes to public service broadcasting will be at the end of the day.
Well, I think it's interesting, Mike. I mean, as I said, the broadcaster VOD pickup has been, I'm talking about the VOD here, yeah, as opposed to the live, has been strong. And I think, what a lot of the established broadcasters have done is to put more of their back catalogue up for streaming and promoted it a little bit more heavily than perhaps they might have during what we might call normal times. So I think, again, generally speaking, broadcaster VOD has performed extremely well.
There's also a growing phenomenon, sorry, Mike, called virtual watch-along parties. I don't know if you've come across this, where someone will pick, an episode from the broadcaster VOD and say, okay, we're now going to watch this episode of Doctor Who at 7 o'clock, and they'll get cast members to tweet along, even though it's not actually being broadcast. It's people. We were talking to Bark in India earlier today, and they were saying that there's been a big uptick in nostalgic television, people in a time of crisis going back to classics and wanting to rewatch them. And I suspect even on a forward-facing service like VOD, people are still wanting to recreate that communal viewing experience.
Yeah, I think it's true on viewing. I think you've seen it also with music as well. I think on Twitter, there's quite a lot of play-alongs, stripped, every hour by different artists and tweet along, and the artist joins in. So, yeah, We are seeing a bit of that. We're seeing people going back on the sports side where clearly live sport's been decimated. You are seeing people beginning to play. BBC's playing old FA Cup semi-finals. Places like Brazil, they're streaming international games from the past. So yeah, and they're getting reasonable audiences. Not obviously the same as you would for a live, but reasonable audiences.
Mm. We're yeah. talking. There is one sport that's carrying on, which is in Florida. They've made the argument that an essential worker is a World Wrestling Federation person. So that bizarrely, that's carrying on. And again, when we were talking to India, apparently people in India have been watching WWF in empty arena go out in India.
Yeah, well, WWE is actually a client of ours, and we're continuing to supply ratings to them on an ongoing basis. Yes,
it's a small world. Sorry, Mike.
I was amused to hear that India, like the football being showed in the UK, in India they're showing cricket matches between India and Pakistan, but only when India win.
Yes, it's exactly the same in Brazil. Funny enough, that Germany game hasn't been broadcast yet.
Yes, David Luiz, finest moment.
Anyhow, Andy, meantime, what's happening to the ad market?
We only see what we see through the ad monitoring. So, you know, what we're seeing in some cases, in some countries like Latin America, we're seeing fewer advertisers. Clearly, the categories like travel have been very heavily hit, almost zero travel advertising. So from a demand perspective, we don't really get to see the demand other than what we see through ad monitoring services. I guess when you put the two things together, it's quite interesting. So you've got record audiences, or, you know, very, very buoyant TV audiences, relatively low demand. So from a cost per thousand basis, other things being equal, television looks like really good value just now. And I guess it's a question of, you know, suitability. You know, do you have the budget? Is the product available to be consumed or be bought by consumers? But in some respects, the opportunity around TV has never been greater from a cost affordability point of view.
Sure, sure.
So I guess it's interesting to get a deeper dive. Obviously, ASI, one of our main focuses on the science and the methodology of TV measurement, which we're primarily focusing on today. We may talk a bit about other currencies later on, but I'm interested, just looking across your markets, what measures have you had to put in place to ensure continuity in your currencies? Because I know there are probably different challenges in different countries, but how are you keeping the data coming out every day?
Well, what we have done is we've invested very heavily in Wi-Fi capability and making sure that all of our employees that are required to are able to access data from home. We are continuing to process across all of our services, not just the television piece, but ad monitoring, the editorial media monitoring that we do in reputation, intelligence and TGI. They all continue as services. The areas where, not surprisingly, you'd expect there to be differences are around face-to-face. So that's the impact on things like panel maintenance and engineers, where we can't go into the homes where we might have previously. Places where we're doing face-to-face establishment surveys or the methodology, if it's, say, radio, might be done face-to-face, particularly in Latin America. Clearly, we've had to adapt that. You know, we're not able to do in-home installations and in-home meter repairs. We're exploring ways in which we can mail meters and coach panelists through installations or repairs. So, you know, we're trying to adapt to the circumstances wherever we can in order to keep services running. You know, if I think again, I know you want to talk primarily about TV, but in radio in Latin America, we started to use more telephone we've started to use digital or online capture on the most recent waves of radio in order to keep the service going. And that's something, frankly, that clients have valued, that sort of continuity of service.
And so I'm intrigued by some of the conversations we're having about the degree to which some of these sort of pragmatic decisions that are being taken are being seen as sort of emergency wartime measures, and the degree to which some of them may well turn out to be things that are kept in place after the crisis abates, because they've accelerated things people may have thought about doing, or they may just be, to be frank, cost-saving measures that a economically challenged client base may welcome afterwards. To what degree are you seeing this as a, you know, the objective to go back to normal, or will we be looking at a new normal?
I think you make a really interesting point, Richard. I think, you know, over the years, more of, if you just talk about TV technology, more of the meter can be updated and accessed remotely rather than necessarily needing to go into the home. I think that will continue as we see the evolution of meter technologies. I mean, the new meter, the PM7 that we're rolling out, has, you know, it's more like a tablet. It's much easier to install, easier to do software downloads. So from a meter perspective, I think you're seeing a change there. I think that on things like face-to-face, I mean, face-to-face random probability sampling is generally accepted to be the best and highest quality of research. There are only two constituencies in research that will really pay that kind of premium for that kind of quality, which are the governmental services and media. And I do think that, you know, we may see a couple of different directions there. We may see some movement away from face-to-face, or what you might see is more sharing of the vehicle, sharing of the research instrument. So it is a high cost. You know, could we piggyback more than one measurement off that piece of fieldwork? So I think you're right. I think there will be a degree of pragmatism. I think also you may see some structural changes that are permanent. You know, we are seeing more clients wanting to go to digital fieldwork. It's a good time if you're out trying to build digital panels just now. So again, thinking about Latin America, you know, response rates are extremely high and recruitment rates are pretty high for internet panels. So in some cases, you know, we are taking the opportunity to invest in markets to build those capabilities that we would expect to be there post crisis.
It's interesting that over the last 10 years, a number of major companies have more or less walked away from face-to-face interviewing because of the challenges of actually maintaining a face-to-face field force, and also, as you say, the fact that it's primarily governmental and media work that drives it. Kantar obviously are one of the companies that does maintain a significant field force. The other challenge, I guess, is keeping that in place, because the people can't be out interviewing. I think typically research companies employ interviewers as self-employed rather than salaried staff. So will there be a challenge in actually getting those interviewers back after the end of this? If they're out of action for, I'm guessing, probably up to 9 months, because social distancing may well be in place long after the lockdown, might it actually find that field forces are actually dissipating as we speak?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to use the field force in other areas. I mean, you know, where they can, we're switching people to be able to do interviewing from home as opposed to face-to-face interviewing. So we're maintaining a relationship with those interviewers. But I guess you're right, Richard, there could be a degree of investment required to ramp the face-to-face field force back up to full strength post-crisis.
And how, I guess it's this how long, it's a piece of string question, but how long do you think that the services can continue in this way before, I know Justin has highlighted some concerns, you know, that after a few months, panel balance may start to be affected, you know, overall in tabs may start to be affected. I guess the two-part question would be, how long do you think we can continue before, you know, additional measures might be needed, and whether Kantar's considering investigating other ways in which the services can be adapted, continued. I mean, the obvious things that come to mind are things like, you know, modelling and usage of available digital data.
Yeah, I think it's a good question that you raised, Richard. I think, you know, it's something that we track daily. So we're tracking daily the NTAP in all the markets that we're in. We have a forward-looking forecast as to looking at churn rates and what we believe will happen over time. I think we're good for at least another 3 to 6 months, depending on the markets that we're talking about. Churn is different in different markets. Clearly, we have breakages of technology as well, which are difficult to repair if it's a hardware breakage that can't be repaired digitally. Then we have to go into the home. So those people will come out of the NTAP panel. But I think generally speaking, we're good for 3 to 6 months. At that point, then again, I think we have to start looking at some of the measures that you talked about, like modelling, rolling forward data that we have got. But again, it will depend market by market in terms of the relationship and ultimately what our clients would want us to do in those different markets.
You mentioned earlier radio, and it's interesting as we're speaking to people, the contrast in the ability to continue between those countries that have gone for portable electronic measurements or have moved over more or less entirely to online diaries versus those markets that are still placing diaries in terms of their ability to continue. One of the things that interests me about this crisis is that it may recur. You know, we don't know that whether we may be in a situation where every 4 or 5 years we have something similar. And I'm guessing clients may want reassurance that business continuity can be guaranteed if this happens again. Do you think that may boost the attractions of electronic measurement over those remaining services that still use largely recall-based sort of personal interviewing?
It's a good question, Richard. I think it might go back to some of the other things I was saying. I think you might see more what the best expression is, confluence of measurement in different markets. I mean, you've seen the directions, for example, that the Dutch joint industry are looking at, where they're beginning to look at bringing together cross-media joint industry measurement solutions. Because I think at the end of the day, it will come down to money at risk and affordability, as these things usually do. So the question is, you know, if you're a radio client, it's the trade-off between having, you know, continuity of measurement on a metered basis. We also have to bear in mind that, you know, we may be going into a time with lower ad revenues for a significant period of time. So the affordability of that might also come into question, need to be traded off against the benefit of the continuity of service.
Mm. Now, you also are heavily involved in measurement of online audiences. Would I be right in assuming that that's been the most insulated from the effects of this, given that they typically do tend to be fairly automated services, you know, based around online panels, cookies, server data, etc.?
Yes, I mean, those businesses are fairly robust. I mean, we, you know, the measurements that we have typically these days are hybrid, so they're integrated with other solutions. But yes, internet measurement has been reasonably robust, mainly because they're relatively passive. Doesn't have that necessity from a field perspective for the out-of-home or face-to-face interactions.
Obviously, you've got responsibility at Kantar for quite a wide area of media activity, which takes in a couple of other areas, which is custom research and also, you've mentioned AdX, but also press monitoring. I'm fascinated by what impact that's having on the ability to conduct custom research, and also whether press monitoring is challenged in an era when presumably every second word is coronavirus in terms of the press. So I called it press monitoring. I think you call it something more modern than that. I'm sure.
I think we call it something more modern. Reputation intelligence.
Reputation intelligence. Sorry. Yes, I'm showing my age.
And by the way, it's all media, Richard. It's digital. It's all different media that we capture.
Yes, exactly.
The editorial. Yeah. But, so I mean, so to answer your question, sure. I mean. If we take them in order, so from a customer research perspective, we are going to, as we mentioned previously and discussed previously, we're going to see more online work in that area. We have a reasonable order book that will carry on, but we would expect to see some decline in demand. I think that's going to be seen globally. But what we're also seeing is a drive to more syndicated data. So people leveraging syndicated data harder. We're building capabilities that allow you to do that. So for example, we're now able in the UK to model a TGI profile against any of our online audiences in terms of saving interview time with those respondents. On the editorial side and on the reputation monitoring, yes, the challenge, we've built special COVID monitors where we're supplying feedback to government institutions and brands about what's happening from that perspective and how their brands are being, in some cases, reported against that. But generally speaking, yes, it is the days of easy access to particularly print media and broadcast media for PR are not so straightforward and is going to be a little bit challenged going forward.
Finally, I'm just interested to know how are your staff adapting to, I presume, predominantly home working. And just what morale's like at the moment in terms of, I think things have hopefully settled down a bit now after the initial sort of novelty of the situation. But what's it like running a division like Kantar Media virtually?
It's interesting, Richard. A lot of screen time in terms of the way that I'm managing, more use of video to communicate with people, more webinars. We've been running pulse surveys with the staff, clearly to try and get feedback as to how they're feeling, what more can we do as an employer to try and help them. As I mentioned, we've made sure that everybody that needs to have access has got access to the web. They've got VPN access at home so they can join in. But, if anything, what we've actually seen was a slight lift in productivity on some of the things like ad coding and editorial coding. Mm. People have been even more productive from home than in an office, which raises some medium-term questions about real estate and rental. But I think the one thing that does come out, which is quite an important point, is about work-life balance. And I think particularly in an industry that employs a lot of women and a lot of working mothers, not to mention fathers as well, having kids at home and trying to work is putting a lot of stress on people. Mm. And the one piece that has come back from the surveys is that people are concerned about work-life balance. Clearly we can't 100% solve that. We're encouraging people to switch off. We're encouraging people to use, social events, Friday afternoon Zoom drinks are fairly wide across the organisation, and quizzes and all that kind of thing. So we're trying to do that, but that's the real watch out, is that work-life balance piece.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a good point to end on. So thanks for taking the time to speak to us. And
thanks very much, Andy.
No doubt we'll be back in touch as this evolves to see how Kantar are continuing to adapt. So thanks for that.
Thanks very much, both.
Yes, bye-bye.